Wong for that very kind and enthusiastic presentation of our Watchtower lesson. Now let's stand and enjoy singing together. Song number 146, Flee to God's Kingdom. This is based on Zephaniah 2:3. Let's stand and sing song number 146. Thank you. Be seated. Each of us has an opportunity to share in the joy of making a donation for the rental of this very comfortable facility and also for the worldwide preaching work. And since contributions are sometimes made by a check, we'd like to inform you that the check should be made payable to Watchtower, because it cares for the work being done by Watchtower Bible Tract Society of Pennsylvania. Now we certainly want to give a warm welcome to our dear brother Garrett Lush and his wife Meredith. Marita. Brother Lush is our guest speaker for this special meeting. As a member of the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses, he has been assigned to serve as zone overseer to visit our branch here in Hawaii. Brother and Sister Lush are originally from Austria, and their native language is German. And Brother Lush has served and full-time ministry since 1961. So today, our special talk is being given by him, and we're certainly looking forward to listening to Brother Lush on the subject, What the Near Future Holds. Brother Lush.
Great pleasure for my wife and myself to be here with you today. I've been to the islands here of Hawaii several times, but we've never been together with such a large crowd as we are today. So it's very encouraging for us to see you all. First of all, I'd like to convey to you love and greetings from the governing body. We are now 9 members on the governing body. The oldest one, Brother John Barr, is 94, and the other ones, range different ages or years. And Brother Jairus is known to some of you, I suppose. He's 83 now. The youngest one on the governing body is in his mid-50s. Well, maybe you know some of the members of the governing body personally. Anyway, I want to emphasize it's not an American institution. It's a scriptural provision or institution. And the brothers from the governing body come from many different ethnic backgrounds and language backgrounds, countries. Like Brother John Barr is from England. Brother Jairus is Polish descent. And then we have Brother David Splane from Canada on the governing body. He's had served as a missionary in Africa for a number of years. Another brother is Geoffrey Jackson, who is from Australia, from Down Under. And he was a missionary in the Pacific, like in the Fiji Islands, where he served on the branch committee for some time. And myself, as you have heard, we are from Austria. Don't mix up Austria and Australia. No kangaroos in Austria. We have brothers on the governing body that have experience as family men. Brother Guy Pierce, for instance, has raised 5 sons that are with their family, all in the truth, adults, of course, and they have children of their own. Brother Anthony Morris also has raised 2 sons, and one of the sons is serving at Bethel with his father, and the other son also served at Bethel for a while. So we have family men experience. And we have Steve Lett, one of the younger members of the governing body, who used to serve as a circuit overseer for many years in the United States, and before that, he also served at Bethel. So our background is very diverse. One of the brothers, Sam Hurd, is a black brother, the only black brother on the governing body. And he's been serving as circuit and district overseers for many years before he became a member of the governing body. Well, I have greetings from the governing body, but also from the congregation that I attend. It's the Red Hook congregation in New York. In New York, we have 365 congregations, one for each day of the year. So please accept the greetings. Did you think that this is much, 365 congregations in one city? Well, Mexico City has more than 1,000 congregations. Also Puebla, another city in Mexico. And in South America, also in Sao Paulo, there's way over 1,000 congregations in that city. Well, Jehovah really blesses the worldwide work. We can see the increase with so many new congregations, 25 new congregations every week. So obviously Jehovah is blessing the efforts of the brothers. Before I start talking about my subject on the near future, I'd like to mention briefly that it's certainly a privilege also for you to be able to meet the chairman for today's program, Brother Jerry Ronco, who used to serve for many years in the Alaska branch, now here, has been appointed as the coordinator, and he has many years of experience for starting full-time service in 1953. Many of those in the audience haven't been even alive in 1953. So it would be nice to have the support here at the branch, and in view of what's coming in the 2009 service year with the international convention. We're looking forward for the Hawaii branch to have a very great encouragement on the part of the publishers all over the islands. Now the subject of what the near future holds. Certainly many people are interested in the future, but some are not. Some are more phlegmatic. This was expressed in a movie years ago with the actress Doris Day, and her little girl in the movie asked her about the future and what will happen to her. And she sang, "Que sera, sera, whatever will be, the future is not ours to see." Was she right? Well, it depends how to look at it. Talking about the personal future, yes, because we cannot foresee our personal future. It's subject to so many, as we've learned in the Watchtower lesson just before, uncertainties, it used that word. But then, on the other hand, the future of mankind and the future of the earth, we can know. Why can we know that? Certainly because Jehovah God has revealed it. For instance, in 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 17, it speaks of this advanced knowledge. It says there, "You therefore, beloved ones, having this advanced knowledge, be on your guard." So we can know things in advance. And that's because Jehovah is a God of revelation. In the world, there's many people that forecast events and predict things, and some of what they say may come true, and other things will not come true, so it's not reliable. In comparison, God's Word, the Bible, is always reliable, because as Titus 1 verse 2 says, God cannot lie. So we can rely on what He foretells in the Bible. People in the world, they have no concept of really what the Bible says. So some are afraid of the future. They are afraid of a nuclear war. They are afraid that climate disasters will happen because of the rising of the oceans, the meltdown of polar caps. Others again fear that an asteroid will hit the earth and destroy all life on it. There's many things that people are afraid of, but if we know the Bible, we do not need to be afraid of the future. We can look into the future with confidence. So now, what does the Bible say about the future? Well, in case you're taking notes, which would be a good idea, because we'll be talking about many different points. Number one is, there will be an international situation in the world where people will make the statement somehow, peace and security. And that will come shortly before the end of the system. It is mentioned in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 3. And in the Watchtower of January 15, 2003, there was a thorough comment made, or an article on this subject. But let's read it from the Bible. 1 Thessalonians 5:3 says, "Whenever it is that they are saying peace and security, then sudden destruction is to be instantly upon them, just as the pang of distress upon a pregnant woman, and they will by no means escape." Well, has this been fulfilled yet or not? Well, obviously not. And we do not know exactly how it's going to be fulfilled. We also do not know whether this expression, peace and security, reflects the desire of the people for peace and security, or whether this statement, peace and security, is a statement and erroneous statements indicating that the people think that they have achieved it. Which way it's going to be, we really don't know. We have to wait and see how this is going to be fulfilled. But it is prophesied in the Bible. It's going to be fulfilled shortly before the end of the system. Now, the disciples of Jesus were much interested also in the future, and in Matthew chapter 24, four of them approached Jesus at the Mount of Olives, and they asked him about it. In chapter 24, verse 3, we can read that. While he was sitting upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples approached him privately, saying, "Tell us, when will these things be? And what will be the sign of your presence and the conclusion of the system of things?" So they were interested in that. But they had in mind the end of the Jewish system of things, because in the minutes before, Jesus talked about the destruction of Jerusalem, as you can see in chapter 23, verse 37. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the killer of the prophets, and so on. And then Jesus said, "Your house is abandoned to you." Yes, and the temple would be destroyed. So with this statement of Jesus, the disciples wanted to know, when will that happen, the end of Jerusalem? But Jesus used the prophecy about the end of Jerusalem as a prophetic pattern for the end of this entire system of things. And many verses indicate that in chapter 24, for instance, in verse 7, it speaks about nation rising against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there would be food shortages, earthquakes, and one place after another, and all these things would be a beginning of the pangs of distress. A beginning, because more things would come before Jesus' final return. Well, what things? In verse 15, for instance, he points out one. Verse 14 speaks about the worldwide preaching of the good news. It says, "The good news of the kingdom will be preached in all the inhabited earth for a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come." And this is, has this been fulfilled today or not yet? It has been fulfilled. We preach in all the entire inhabited earth. But it doesn't mean that we should stop preaching because that verse has been fulfilled. Because there will be additional individuals that will accept the truth and join us in worshiping Jehovah. But every day more than 3 million hours are being preached the good news. But then Jesus said something interesting in verse 15. "Therefore," he says, "when you catch sight of the disgusting thing that causes desolation, as spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, then let those in Judea begin fleeing to the mountains." Well, what was this disgusting thing that Jesus foretold? If we look to the parallel account of what Jesus said as recorded by Luke in chapter 21 in Luke, Luke adds a specific detail of what Jesus said. He said, "When you see Jerusalem encamped by armies..." Well, so this refers in the first fulfillment or application to the Roman armies that were taking a threatening position, encamping all around Jerusalem. Yes, they were almost undermining, they started to undermine the city wall, and it looked like they would be successful in their attempt to get into the city. Well, when did that happen? Did that happen in the year 70 of our common era? No. It happened a few years before. It happened in the year 66. And who was the general? Cestius Gallus, and he led the Roman army in the first attack on Jerusalem. But although he was not able to cause desolation, his army, for some unknown reason, suddenly withdrew from the attack. And then later, another Roman army came under a different general, Titus. And under this general, then in the year 70, there was desolation coming upon the city of Jerusalem. Why did Jesus say that the Roman armies were something disgusting? Well, particularly it refers to their worshipping their ensigns, committing idolatry with them. And in one of the Awake issues, it says this, and I quote, "On this subject of Roman worship of military standards, the second century Tertullian historian, in his Apologeticus, states that the entire religion of a Roman camp almost consisted in worshipping the ensigns, swearing by the ensigns, and in preferring the ensigns before all other Roman gods. And Josephus, another historian, in his book Wars of the Jews, book 6, chapter 6, tells that after the Roman soldiers had set fire to the temple of Jerusalem on the 10th day of the 5th month of AD 70, they brought their ensigns to the temple. And they had this abbreviation on top of it, SPQR, Senate and People of Rome, Senatus Populusque Romanus, and of course in Latin. Well, it was certainly something disgusting, this idolatry that the Roman soldiers committed. It was also disgusting for the Christians in the city. Now, that was in the first century. Does this have another application in our modern times? And the answer is yes. Jerusalem, unfaithful to Jehovah God, pictures prophetically unfaithful Christendom. Now, who will take a threatening position against Christendom and finally cause the desolation of Christendom? Well, it will be political forces within the United Nations. In 1919, it was the League of Nations that came into existence, and after World War II, when it ended, they took on a new name, United Nations, but they continued their operations with the leftover money from the League, which indicates that it's really the same organization. Do we see today the nations of Christendom being threatened as if surrounded by an army? No, not yet. Do we see Christian religions flourishing today still and trying still to manipulate political governments? Yes, they still do. And they exert influence. That threat against Christendom is still future. It's true that Christian nations are being threatened today by Al-Qaeda, but not by elements in the United Nations yet. And Al-Qaeda does not fight the religion of Christendom so much, but the political governments of Christendom. Terror acts were committed against political institutions like embassies and so on of the United States and Britain and other countries, but not against church buildings of Christendom. This is what the Watchtower of 1999 said in the issue of May 1, said on page 16, "The disgusting thing appeared at the beginning of last century, but its taking a threatening position is yet future. We need to wait to see its detailed fulfillment. However, even now it can be noted that there is growing hate towards religion in a number of countries." Now a little bit more into going into detail about what will happen. There's a parallel prophecy we find in Revelation chapter 17. If you want to turn there, please. Revelation chapter 17. And this speaks of the world empire of false religion called Babylon the Great. It also speaks here of different governments, including the United Nations. Now let's look into it a little bit more in detail. First, in verse 1, John is being told, "Come, I will show you the judgment upon the great harlot, or prostitute, who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication." Spiritual, yeah, fornication. And if we look further down in verse 8, it says, it speaks about a wild beast that was mentioned already in verse 3, the woman sitting upon a scarlet-colored or red wild beast. And it says that it has seven heads and 10 horns. Of course, it's all symbolism. Now, verse 8 says, "The wild beast that you saw was, but is not, and yet is about to ascend out of the abyss, and is to go off into destruction." Now, was there a political entity that existed for a while and then not, as if in an abyss of inactivity, and then ascended again out of the abyss? Yes, that was. The League of Nations and United Nations, they were or existed from 1919 until World War II started, and then they went into an abyss of inactivity, and then after that they came out again in 1945. And when we read further in verse 9, it identifies also that wild beast by saying the seven heads mean mountains, symbolically, where the woman sits on top, and there are seven kings. Here you have the identification. Kings, political entities. And the wild beast, verse 11, says that was but is not, and we'll come back again, it is also an eighth king, a political entity, but it springs from the seven. Now, isn't it true that the United Nations is made up of governments from other nations? Seven world powers, their remaining powers, and also 10 horns symbolizing a completeness of all other governments. Yes, the United Nations is made up out of this. And then what will happen? The woman Babylon is trying to manipulate this wild beast, but there will be a turn of events. The wild beast is going to start hating that woman and is going to destroy her. Further down in verse 16 it says, "And the 10 horns that you saw and the wild beast in its entirety, these will hate the harlot and will make her devastated and naked, and will eat up her fleshly parts, and will completely burn her with fire." Well, this will happen to false religion, including unfaithful Christendom. It says, "For God put it into their hearts to carry out His thought." Yeah, it's a judgment from God. When that will happen, then what are the governments going to do with false religion? Well, obviously, confiscating all their bank accounts, all their properties that they hold, the real estate, probably putting a number of clergymen into prison, and perhaps even killing some. We'll have to wait to see all the details. But the Bible prophesies here a total end of all false religion. The only ones that will survive this attack will be Jehovah's people, because Jesus said that they will survive. And they will survive similarly to Christians in the first century that survived the first attack on Jerusalem. Because In Matthew 24, verse 16, Jesus said that when the Roman armies are taking action against Jerusalem, at the first opportunity, what should they do? It says, then let those in Judea, this is the province, begin fleeing to the mountains. Let the man on the housetop not come down to take the goods out of his house, and let the man in the field not return to the house to pick up his outer garments. And then he uses the word great tribulation in verse 21. For there will be great tribulation on Jerusalem, such as has not occurred since the world's beginning until now, no, nor will occur again. So Christians, they believed Jesus' words, and when the first attack resulted in the army retreating, they took advantage and ran. They survived this attack. And so in today's time also, true Christians will survive the destruction of false religion. Now Jesus uses here the expression great tribulation. So the question is everything that's going to happen in the great tribulation happening all at once, or are there different phases or segments to the great tribulation? And what would you say? The great tribulation consists of one or two or three segments? Well, the answer is three. There will be a beginning phase of the Great Tribulation with the destruction of false religion, including Christendom. There will be an ending phase of the Great Tribulation when the final return of Christ is as an executioner, destroying Satan's system of things. But there will also be a period of time between that. And that happened also in the first century, because the tribulation began in the year 66, but it ended in the year 70. But there was almost 4 years in between, and that was also great tribulation on Jerusalem, because after the Christians had suddenly left, then the rulers of the city decided nobody is allowed to leave the city. Everybody had to stay in the city, and they felt that if one would not want to stay, he would be like a traitor. There were too many people in the city left, not enough food. There were problems with the famine, and also the Jews inside the city of Jerusalem, as historians indicate, were divided into different political entities or parties, and they were not just against each other, they even went so far as to kill the others within the city. Jews killing Jews inside the city. Yes, all these years from 66 to 70 were also great tribulation. In our modern time, when Babylon is going to be destroyed until Armageddon, there will be a period of time in between where different things will happen, and it will all be great tribulation. So what things will happen after the destruction of Babylon the Great and Christendom? Verse 29 shows us. In Matthew 24, verse 29, Jesus says, immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Now when he says after the tribulation, does he mean after Armageddon? After the final phase of the great tribulation? No. These things will happen after the first attack, after the destruction of Babylon. So when false religion is no more, then what will happen is the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, stars will fall from heaven, the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Well, this, of course, has to be seen in the light of what the Watchtower termed celestial phenomena in the physical heavens. What exactly will happen? Well, we don't know exactly what will happen, but it will be very impressive. The Watchtower of February 15, 1994 said this on page 20. Could there be frightening events in the physical heavens? Quite likely, and far more awe-inspiring than those described by Josephus as occurring near the end of the Jewish system. Well, another prophet, Joel, in chapter 2, 30 and 31 said, and I will give portents in the heavens and on earth, blood and fire and smoke. The sun itself will be turned into darkness and the moon into blood. Now, Josephus reported that during that second phase of the Great Tribulation on Jerusalem, before the destruction in 70, a star stood over the city, and a comet remained a whole year. So that was something very unique for the inhabitants of Jerusalem to see. That was during that phase in between the first and the last attack. Well, Jesus foretold these celestial phenomena, and these phenomena will cause even the opposers to beat themselves in grief, not in repentance. And the Bible uses the word they will beat themselves in lamentation if you look at verse 30. Yeah. It also says that the people will become faint out of fear. Go to the parallel account in Luke chapter 21. It also speaks in verse 25 here of sun, moon, and stars, and it says anguish of the nations, not knowing the way out. And then in verse 26, while men become faint out of fear and expectation of the things coming upon the inhabited earth, for the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Is this being fulfilled now? No. The nations are not faint out of fear. They have a measure of fear. But when these physical phenomena will occur in the heavens, it will so terrify them that they become unconscious, out of fear, faint out of fear. That hasn't happened yet. That will come after the destruction of false religion. Well, for this reason, we should not use this verse in field service or in ministry and apply it to today when it speaks of the fear, because it does not apply to today. It's future. Now, back to Matthew 24:29, it says that stars will fall from heaven. Will that be symbolically fulfilled or literally? Obviously, stars do not fall to the earth, since they are larger than the earth. The earth would fall into a star. Only a comet or asteroid could fall into the earth. But see, we do not know exactly what Jesus meant, so we have to wait and see. But the faithful slave said in the knowledge book, there will be frightening events in the physical heavens. The knowledge book, page 106. So you have probably that book at home. So that points to a more literal explanation, doesn't it? Now back to Luke 21, it also mentions another detail. It says at the end of verse 25, Luke 21:25, that the people will have anguish because of the roaring of the sea or the ocean and its agitation. Obviously, that will cause panic among people. Is this going to be fulfilled symbolically or literally? Well, we do not know for sure. But it could well be that it has a literal application. and that could be in connection with tsunamis and other things that might happen. And Jesus knew in advance what things will happen. He also predicted the earthquakes that caused tsunamis. So that we know from not too long ago in Indonesia what the disaster a tsunami can cause. And you had one here in Hawaii also years ago. So all this will happen after the first, but before the last part of the Great Tribulation. Well, then what else will happen? Verse 27 says, "And then they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory." And in Luke chapter 21, it uses the expression, similar expression, like in Matthew 24. In verse 24 in Matthew, verse 30, it says, then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven. Now, is this a sign of Christ's presence? Not really. The sign of Christ's presence is a sign on earth and consists in many, many different things that will happen on earth. Here we're talking about a different sign. A sign in heaven, not on earth. The sign of the Son of Man. And that will cause then all the nations to beat themselves in lamentation. Now, in what will the sign of the Son of Man consist? And the answer is, we don't know. It hasn't happened yet, ever. But it will be something very impressive, so that even the enemies will beat themselves in lamentation. They will realize this is supernatural. This is not just a natural disaster or cause that will eventually lead to their destruction. They will realize that this is supernatural. What else will happen then? Well, it says in verse 31, "He will send out his angels with a great trumpet sound, and they will gather his chosen ones from the four winds," similar expression like in Revelation 7, "from one extremity of the heavens to the other extremity." And the watchtower explained that this refers to the bringing together and final sealing of anointed Christians. That will happen after the destruction of false religion. It has not happened yet. Well, the watchtower of 2006 just recently said, "Soon, starting with the destruction of false religion, Satan's world will experience a tribulation that such as it has never experienced before. Fear will envelop faithless mankind. Yet during that chaotic time, Jehovah's servants will rejoice in their hope." And Jesus then said, according to Luke 21:28, "As these things start to occur, raise yourselves erect, lift your heads up, because your deliverance is getting near." Question: has this been fulfilled? Is now the time to raise ourselves erect and lift our heads up? The answer is no, because this is all things happening after the destruction of false religion. It's true that every day the deliverance comes a day closer. That's true in that general sense. But specifically, Jesus was talking about what happens during the Great Tribulation. When the Great Tribulation will have started, then it is time to stand erect and lift the heads up, because the deliverance is getting near. Therefore, the Watchtower recently said in 2005, January 15, on page 19, "In fact, when the Great Tribulation strikes, they will joyfully," Jehovah's people, "raise themselves erect and lift their heads up, because they know their deliverance is near." When will it happen? Watchtower said, when the Great Tribulation strikes. It hasn't done that yet. It hasn't started yet. It's all future. Further, a year before, the Watchtower said this in February 1 on page 17, "In the composite sign of the conclusion of the system of things, Jesus foretold exciting events, some of which are still ahead of us, And then he quotes Matthew 24 and the verses 29 to 31 that we have just discussed verse by verse. It says that it is ahead of us. As we see these things occur, our hope for deliverance will become brighter. Jesus stated, as these things start to occur, raise yourselves erect, lift your heads up, the deliverance is getting near. Well, in Matthew 24, if we look a little further in the chapter, Jesus then brings an illustration about the fig tree and says in verse 32, as soon as its young branch grows tender and it puts forth leaves, you know that the summer is near. Likewise, you also, when you see all these things, know that he is near at the doors. Truly, I say to you that this generation will by no means pass away until all these things occur. Well, this raises two questions. First of all, what did Jesus mean with this generation? Now, many times in the Bible, the word generation is applied to wicked people, wicked generation, and adulterous generation, but it doesn't always have to have a negative connotation. Recently, at the annual meeting, it was explained that the term this generation refers to the generation of anointed Christians that will still be living at that part when the Great Tribulation is on. And when Jesus said, all these things, likewise also you, verse 33, when you see all these things, yeah? Now that includes the things happening after the destruction of false religion. So the verse 34 cannot refer to today. It refers to the time during the Great Tribulation when the people will see and Christians will see the fulfillment of all these things, not just a few of them. And then he says that these will not pass away until all things occur, including the final execution by Jesus Christ, the King. Now, what will happen then in connection just before Jesus will intervene? The Bible says that something else will happen during the Great Tribulation, before Armageddon, and that is an attack on God's people. You see, at the beginning of the Great Tribulation, the attack is against Babylon the Great, false religion, and they will destroy them. But we will be left over. And then we don't know how long the period will be in between, but finally they will also want to destroy us. And that is expressed in a prophecy in Daniel 11:44-45 with the expression of the attack of a symbolical king of the north. Now, who was that king of the north in the past? Until 1991, it is understood from prophecy and their fulfillment that it was the ex-Soviet Union under the leadership of Russia that constituted the King of the North together with some communist satellite states. But who is it today? And the answer is, we do not know. We don't know who will impersonate this role in the future, but the Bible says that the King of the North will embark on a campaign against God's people. Now, the Daniel prophecy book that we have studied in our congregation book studies had an interesting sentence. It encouraged us not to speculate, but it also said, when the King of the North embarks on his final campaign that's against us, the fulfillment of prophecy will be clearly discerned by all who have Bible-based insight. So at the latest, when the attack is on, we will know who is the King of the North. Daniel's prophecy book, chapter 16, page 281, for those who are taking notes. Similar attack is prophesied with other terms symbolically terms in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 38, and speaks of Gog, a certain Gog who will attack God's people. And that attack probably will be at the same time as the attack of the king of the north. And how the details will be fulfilled, it will have to wait and see. Now, Jesus' return has different meanings. He returned in a certain sense, 1914, to start ruling as king. He returned in other aspects to resurrect anointed ones from the past. That it's possible that it happened around 1918. He returned in the sense of being present during the entire time of the end. But there will be a final return when he puts an end to the system of things. And with reference to this, we can read in Revelation chapter 1 how this is going to be fulfilled. Revelation chapter 1, verse 7. Speaking of Jesus, here in the vision, John says, "Look, he is coming with the clouds, Jesus, and every eye will see him, and those who pierced him. And all the tribes of the earth will beat themselves in grief because of him." Yes, amen. Now, did that have already a fulfillment in 1914 or during the entire time of the end? No. How would you prove that it is no? Well, because it says every eye will see him. Now, today, only with the figurative eyes, Jehovah's people sees him as being present as king. But not every eye. The majority of mankind do not see him as a reigning king. But since it says every eye will see him, it must refer to the future. Yes, it refers to Armageddon. In Armageddon, every individual on earth will realize that this is the judgment that we announced beforehand, that it is not just some natural disaster, it's the divine judgment. In that sense, they will see him or realize that this is by Jesus the King. It says, even those who pierced him, that refers to enemies, like those who literally pierced him when he was taken down from the stake. And today, who persecutes the anointed and pierces them, in a sense also pierces Jesus. He said, "What you do to the least of my brothers, you do unto me." And it says, all the tribes of the earth will beat themselves in grief because of him, because of Jesus. So we don't see that happening. Mainland China and Russia and other nations are not beating themselves in grief now because of Jesus. See, that's all future. It refers to Armageddon. Now, what will happen in Armageddon when Jesus will destroy the leftover of this entire system of things? Well, an interesting prophecy we can find in Zechariah chapter 14. Zechariah chapter 14 and verse 12. It's all speaking here in connection or using some prophetic expressions, talking about people that will wage war against Jerusalem. Of course, Jerusalem here is not the literal city of Jerusalem, but in prophecy it refers to something else and refers to God's government. And verse 12 says, "And this is what will prove to be the scourge with which Jehovah will scourge all the peoples that actually do military service against Jerusalem by fighting the remnant. There will be a rotting away of one's flesh while one is standing upon one's feet, and one's very eyes will rot away in their sockets, and one's very tongue will rot away in one's mouth." Well, we are not 100% sure whether this would not have also a symbolical fulfillment, but there's strong indication to believe that this will happen literally, Jehovah using some kind of radiation to cause this destruction upon all of mankind that is not willing to serve him. This is also the time when Jesus will make his final separation of sheep and goats, figuratively speaking, mentioned in Matthew chapter 25. That's the context of what we have discussed earlier in Matthew 24. So in Matthew 25, and when it was written, there was no chapter division, so it's still part of the same prophecy. He talks about this parable, but we don't have the time to read it all, but at the end, in verse 46, he says this, "And these will depart into everlasting cutting off," that's the goats, goat-like people who don't want to yield, that they have that spirit of independence, they don't want to be obedient to Christ. "These will be going into not everlasting torment, no, everlasting cutting off." And the Greek word here, kolasis, means cutting, and it means cutting off of life, not everlasting torture. "But the righteous ones, like sheep, into everlasting life." So Jesus will see to it that the sheep will survive. Yes, this will all happen when Jesus finally returns as executioner. Now, do we need to be afraid? No, because Jesus said the righteous ones will go into everlasting life, even without dying. And this is indicated in Revelation chapter 7, where it also speaks of the Great Tribulation. And in the vision, John asked the angel that showed him the vision how he is to understand this, and who is this great crowd, where it says in chapter 7 and verse 13, who are figuratively dressed in white robes. And so he asked about the explanation, and the angel tells him these are the ones that come out of the Great Tribulation. Now, if somebody goes into a battle and comes out of the battle, well, that means he has survived it. And here, this great crowd mentioned in verse 9, out of all nations and tribes and peoples and tongues, yes, it says they come out of the Great Tribulation, meaning they will survive the final execution of Jesus. They are the sheep-like people that will be preserved. Now, when Jesus talked about these things, he also warned the disciples and said in one case in Matthew 24:44, "Prove yourselves as such that are ready," and that was also in our Watchtower resume, "to be ready, because at an hour that you do not think it to be, the Son of Man is coming." He was talking to his disciples. Of course, it will also surprise the world in general, but even the disciples will be surprised, because Jesus said it will come at an hour that you do not think it to be. The only way not to get surprised is to always reckon with it, always be prepared. The future, as foretold in the Bible, is certain to come true. Remember in Matthew 24, let's go back to this prophecy again. It uses an interesting expression, verse 22, after talking about the Great Tribulation, and says, "In fact, unless those days of the Great Tribulation were cut short, no flesh would be saved, but on account of the chosen ones, those days will be cut short." Now, true or false, when were those days cut short in the first century? Oh, it was in the year 70. False, because I asked true or false. It was false. It was actually in the year 66. The attack of the Romans was interrupted. In that sense, it was cut short. This gave the Christians an opportunity to flee. So when it says here flesh would be saved, certainly it was the Christians that were saved. Now, what application does this have for our modern times? Does this refer to being saved and the days being cut short in Armageddon? No, because the attack on Jerusalem 66 does not picture Armageddon. but the destruction of false religion, which will happen sometime before Armageddon. So what it means then is that Christians, the flesh, will be saved. When Babylon is destroyed, we will be saved. We will survive. On the other hand, those who survive the destruction of false religion, if they remain faithful, will also survive the end of the Great Tribulation, as we've mentioned in Revelation chapter 7. Now, back then, Jesus told the disciples, let the man on the housetop, like in Jerusalem, not come down to take the goods out of his house. Well, how could he flee if he doesn't come down from the housetop? Well, because it was the custom to have outside stairwells that led directly into the street. There was a stairway into the courtyard and one to the street. And Jesus said, don't even bother going back into your house or room to pick up things. Just run. Take the outside stairway. And then he says, those who are outside the city in the field should never even think about going back to Jerusalem and pick up things before they really flee. No, they should leave everything behind and just run. And that's what Christians did. They ran to the mountains across the Jordan and were in safety. Well, in connection with their flight, what did it mean for the Christians back then? The flight meant to lose all material possessions that they had. They lost their businesses in Jerusalem. They lost their houses. They lost all the furniture, everything in their houses, everything. But the flesh, they as persons, were saved. Now, does this have a prophetic application for us today? Well, is this true or false? The modern-day flight out of Jerusalem is the same as the flight out of Babylon the Great, false religion. True or false? It's false. Just think of the Christians in the first century. When they fled, was there any change of religion involved for them? Did they change from false religion, like the Jewish apostate religion, to becoming Christians when they fled? No. They were already true Christians before. So today, the fleeing does not refer out of Jerusalem, does not refer to changing one's religion from false to true. Because we are already practicing the true religion when the Great Tribulation starts. So then, what does it mean, the flight out of Jerusalem? Well, it means the same thing like in the first century, that most of us, during the Great Tribulation, will lose our material possessions. If you have a house, you've got to reckon that you may be saved as flesh, but your house maybe not. Your possessions, your business, maybe not saved. Yes, the watchtower indicated that much, that we have to reckon with losing material things, like the Christians in the first century. And that's really why we should not pursue materialistic goals. We should not hang our heart on material things, because we may enjoy them only a very, very short time, only until the Great Tribulation comes. Now, the Watchtower said this back in 1999, May 1 edition. It is also significant that Jesus warned about not going back to one's house to retrieve garments or other goods. So there may be tests ahead of us, how we view material things. Are they the most important thing for us, or is the salvation that will come for all on God's side more important? Yes, fleeing may involve hardships and deprivations. We will have to be ready to do whatever it takes. We must be ready that our refuge continues to be Jehovah and His mountain-like organization. Because fleeing to a literal mountain, that's not the application in modern times. The highest mountain in Hawaii will not protect anybody. but it's Jehovah's mountain-like organization and perhaps also his kingdom. Then in 2006, recently, the Watchtower commented also on this, said Christians had to be willing to make sacrifices, not allowing themselves to become sidetracked by material possessions. They had to be willing to say goodbye to all their belongings in order to obey Jesus' warning. Are we willing? Are we ready to say goodbye to all our belongings? The Watchtower continued, those who promptly obeyed and fled to the other side of the Jordan were saved. Well, will the anointed ones be saved when the Great Tribulation comes? Will they be saved during the final phase of the Great Tribulation? And the answer is, we do not know. Again, we do not know. We know a lot of things, but there's a lot of things still we don't know exactly. There are some prophecies that would point to a survival of some into the new world, and there's other prophecies that could be interpreted as indicating it will not happen. And maybe that they all together go to heaven when Armageddon comes. We have no conclusive answer to that question. So we need to wait and see. Some of the things that will happen in the future, we have to admit, we just don't know yet. But we know one thing, that the climax of the foretold events is near. Some may doubt that, because there are so many people on earth that still have not heard the good news yet. Just thinking of 1.3 billion Chinese in mainland China. It's true, we are preaching in mainland China, but in comparison with that huge figure, Jehovah's Witnesses in China are small. And then there's more than 1 billion people in India, and 80% of India has never ever been preached to, so that's another challenge. And then there's 1 billion Muslims in the world, so you have already 3 billion, half of world population, where only very few have heard the good news. Fortunately, in the largest Muslim country, we are now legalized. The largest Muslim country, population-wise, is Indonesia. Indonesia has 50 million people more than Russia. Can you imagine? And we are legalized. We've been sending missionaries there. We have a branch office there. So we do not know for sure whether Jesus will open up the Muslim world. We have legalization in Pakistan and in Turkey since a few months, also Muslim countries. We don't know what will happen. Jesus knows. He has all the power. He can arrange for it in ways that we cannot conceive of. But he indicated that no matter how zealously we will preach, we will not be finished with the preaching work when he will come in his final coming. In Matthew chapter 10:23, Jesus said this, and he was talking about the persecution and about preaching. First, he says, when they persecute you in one city, flee to another. And then he said, for truly, it's 10:23, I say to you, you will by no means complete the circuit of the cities of Israel until the Son of Man arrives. Now somebody could perhaps think, now he was talking about the first century, because he mentions cities of Israel. But really that is just a figurative expression. How do we know? How would you argue? Well, because Jesus said at the end of the sentence, until the Son of Man arrives, and he did not arrive back in the first century. This arrival or return, the final return of Christ, would be in our time. So we know that this was just an expression. All the cities of Israel really meant in the first century everybody. He says, you will not be finished with the preaching work until the final return of Christ in Armageddon. Well, therefore, we should not say, well, if we will not be finished, then we shouldn't try. No, every person is precious in Jehovah's eyes, and therefore we will do our best to keep preaching the good news no matter what. We will not stop preaching. And we have proof that the time when he will come is really near. How do we know that it is really near? Think of back of what we read in Revelation chapter 17 about the United Nations that was and was not and was again. And it also says there that it's an eighth king. It's and the last, the Bible only speaks of eight figuratively kings or political powers. There's no ninth king. The United Nations is the last in prophecy mentioned. And when did it start? Well, we mentioned 1919. It existed 20 years prior to the abyss, from 1919 to 1939. And then came out of the abyss, 1945. So how long has it been out now? Well, 63 years, almost. So that is three times as long as prior to the abyss. But all that the Bible says, it will come out of the abyss and will go into destruction, and that's the end of it. There's nothing more happening after that. The thousand-year reign will be happening then. So seeing that the wild beast is already out three times as long out of the abyss than it existed prior to the abyss, isn't that an indication that we can conclude it seems that we are getting very close to this event? Well, in talking about the future, we also want to see the positive things, and there's a bright future for mankind ahead of us, a marvelous future. It will be liberation and relief for God's people that are oppressed in certain parts of the world where the work is under ban. And we are looking forward to the resurrection of our dear loved ones, to get to know them. And how many people will be resurrected? We can only make an estimate. When I came into the truth in the 1950s, the estimate was about 20 billion. By now, certainly, we will have to estimate 30 billion people that ever lived. Can you think of 30 billion people coming back in the resurrection in one day? Well, that would not be logical. There would be many, many, many times more than survivors of Armageddon. No, we do not expect that. We believe that the resurrection will happen gradually. One generation after the other, going backwards, which also eliminates problems of understanding in language, because every generation understood their parents. And the Insight book that we have, a research book, some of you have it, talking about the resurrection, it indicates that the resurrection may take 200 or 300 years until everybody is back. And considering that they come back, preparations for them have to be made. Because when they are resurrected, they don't have a house. They have no food. Those who are living then, survivors, will have to prepare lodging for them, houses, apartments. And that takes time. Maybe the quick build kingdom hall arrangement that we have in some parts of the world is a good training for that. We are this way building more than 2,000 kingdom halls every year in developing countries, and getting better at it all the time and faster. Maybe a good training for then building houses for the resurrected ones. And also, when Jesus resurrected a girl, the first thing he said to the parents is, give her something to eat. Well, we'll have to give the resurrected something to eat. They don't have anything. So there is a lot of work to be done in preparation for the resurrection. And we do not expect that the resurrection will start the day after Armageddon, because the Bible indicates that for a certain time, even it says, there will be people going through the entire earth doing nothing else than just burying the dead. So the earth will have to be cleansed first before the resurrection will start. But how wonderful to embrace our loved ones that we lost in death and get to know them. Well, we all have four grandparents, two on the mother's side and two on the father's side. And we may know them all four, but when it comes to great-grandparents, some of us, I knew only one. We have all of us have eight great-grandparents, and I only knew one great-grandmother. The other ones, I don't even know their names, to be honest. So in this time of the end, people are quickly forgotten, isn't it so? Fortunately, Jehovah does not forget them. They're all stored in his memory. And he will bring them back. And also our 16 great-great-grandparents and the 32 great-great-great-grandparents. And to see who they were, that will be a wonderful experience. And maybe some of you will find out that you're related, just a few generations past. Well, it will be wonderful to live in that new paradise that Jehovah has in mind to restore during the millennium, during the 1,000 years of the Messianic Kingdom rule, and we're looking forward to it, all of us. But a lot of work. We should not just think of paradise as having a continuous vacation, traveling all over the world. But there will be a lot of work to do during the 1,000 years. Who does not want to work? For him, the new world is not meant to be, only for those who are willing to work. Well, how will the resurrected ones come back? Again, we don't know the details, whether they come back with clothes on or not with clothes on. We know that they will come back. That's the main thing. We don't know where they will come back. If somebody drowned in the ocean, of course, he will not come swimming back out of the ocean. But probably somewhere on land, will there be special houses for that, where the resurrection will occur? Possible. We don't know these details that the Bible has not revealed. But there will be a resurrection. And the people that are resurrected will be coming back with their body restored. That means if they died very old age, they will not come back looking like 90 years old people or 80 years old. No, they will come back with a body that matches the body of Adam and Eve. And if they had a limb missing, like a leg or an arm, they will not come back without that leg or arm, but Jehovah will resurrect them with a restored body, like Jesus once restored the withered arm of a man in an instant. He could do that. And we shouldn't be surprised these things happen, because even in nature today we see that it's almost unbelievable, but it does happen. For instance, the giant squid, I don't know whether there are some near Hawaii, probably. They have the shark as an enemy, and it happens sometimes the shark bites away the arm of a squid, but the squid may escape. These arms of giant squids may be 2 meters or yards long. The squid has the ability to restore the whole arm. It grows back. And we wouldn't believe it if it wouldn't happen, but it does happen. So the survivors that will live into the new world, they will have their body restored instantly. And the resurrected ones will come back with a not perfect body yet, because certain imperfections will still be attached to them, and they will get rid of those until the end of the 1,000 years. But as far as a complete body, they will all have a complete body. And in this near future to come, we know that color of our hair will turn back to normal, or some that lost their hair, it will grow back. We know we can throw away the glasses, And a fourth set of teeth will grow. Why the fourth set? Well, the third set is the artificial set. Should that be surprising? Well, no. We know from scientists that there's the piranhas in the Amazon River and certain sharks that no matter how often they lose a tooth, it always keeps growing back and back and back. It's not fair, is it? For these animals, it happens they can grow back their teeth all the time of their life. We cannot right now, but in the new world, what Jehovah has done with these creatures, to just look at it gives us the conviction that for him it would be no problem for all mankind grow back their teeth to perfection eventually. And we know that also there will be no more oppression of the people, there will be no more depression, no more exploitation, no pharmacies, no hospitals, no police, no military. Yes, there's a wonderful future ahead of us. Now, to be allowed to live in that time, what do we have to do? Well, first of all, grow in knowledge and understanding and reading the Bible, not only regularly, that's not enough. Reading it daily, yeah? As the Watchtower also encouraged us today. Attend the meetings regularly. Progress toward baptism, if you are not baptized yet. Promote Jehovah's worship by speaking about Jehovah and the kingdom and this beautiful future ahead of us with others. Do we feel motivated to do these things? Well, then we can greatly increase our chance to live to see this future. But do we believe that it is close? Can others, by our goals in life, realize that we truly believe that? Somebody mentioned college. Brother Wong mentioned it at the end of his resume of the Watchtower. And there was a study made about 200,000 university students in 390 institutions. And the interesting thing that they found was 71% said that they were going to college to make bigger money that they hoped to earn afterwards. Now, a few go for the fame, and few parents want their children to go there so they can say, my son is a doctor. But there's also some that have good motives and pioneer throughout college. But on the other hand, we have also lost too many children or young ones, teenagers, to the world. And when they started college, they may have had good intentions, but then the philosophies of the professors and peer pressure all influenced them during the years, and at the end of college they left the truth. And so to go to college is a certain risk. And instead of pursuing higher education, we should pursue the highest education, which is higher than college education. And this is the education we find in God's Word. And put the kingdom interest first. And not live as if Armageddon and the Great Tribulation will be far away. See? You can show whether you believe or not that we are close to the Great Tribulation. We have an example of in the Bible of the secretary of a prophet, Jeremiah. His name was Baruch, not Barak, but Baruch. And in Jeremiah 45, Jehovah speaks to him. And although he had served as secretary to the prophet for a while, when it came to the destruction of Jerusalem, he was in danger because he lost his vision, I mean, as to what is important. And he was after some grandiose things in life. The Bible doesn't say what things they were. But in Jeremiah 45, Jehovah says in verse 4, this is what you should say to him, that is to Baruch. This is what Jehovah has said. Look, what I've built up, I'm tearing down, and what I've planted, I'm uprooting, even all the land itself. But as for you, you keep seeking great things for yourself, says Jehovah. And then he encourages him and say, do not keep seeking. So we want to also say the same thing to all those who have great plans for their future in this old system of things that will pass away, and we want to plead with them, do not keep on seeking great things in this old system of things. Rather, seek first the kingdom in your life to be able then to please Jehovah and to be part of the wonderful future ahead of him. Now, fortunately, it seems that Baruch took that to heart, and Jehovah promised also to him not the survival of his belongings, but he says in verse 5, for here I am bringing a calamity upon all flesh, is the utterance of Jehovah, and I will give you your soul as a spoil in all the places to which you may go. And that's wonderful, to live. What a privilege. Jehovah has not promised to preserve our belongings, but to preserve us and to give us our life. The soul here means life, as a spoil. And for those who are surviving the great tribulation, it will be wonderful to live on and on. And we shouldn't think only of 1,000 years. Because 1,000 years in the eternity, that's just a blinking of an eye. What about 10,000 years? 100,000 years? Think of living 1 million years. 10 million, 100 million, 1 billion, 10 billion, 100 billion, 1 trillion, 10 trillion. 100 trillion, 1 quadrillion, and so on and on and on. But everlasting life is much longer than that. Everlasting life means to live forever and ever, as long as Jehovah lives. And this everlasting life in perfection, in the paradise, is what Jehovah God has offered to us. And do we appreciate it? It is possible through the ransom sacrifice of Jesus Christ, not on our own merits, but how we can grow in our love for Jehovah, meditating upon that wonderful future that Jehovah has promised to us, and certainly will give you due to the fact that he cannot lie. May we all be experiences this wonderful future. Well, for the next few days, my wife and I will be in the branch here in Hawaii, in Oahu, and serve the brothers here and the Bethel family. Then after that, our zone trip is scheduled to have as next stop Guam and all these many islands that are under the Guam branch, and many, many missionaries that will all come to the branch in Guam. We'll meet them there. And then after Guam, we'll go to Manila, Philippines. And then from Manila, 10 hours flight south to Sydney, Australia. And then from Australia to New Zealand, before we ever go back to the United States. But if you would like me, I would be pleased to take your love and greetings back or on to these branches that we will visit in the next few weeks. May I do this? And also, I'm sure that you'd like to send through me love and greetings also to the United States Bethel family of a little over 4,000 and the governing body. It was a pleasure to be with you today, and please visit us at headquarters one day if you are able to. Otherwise, I hope maybe one day to return to the islands as we have been doing in the past from time to time. May Jehovah bless you.
Thank you very much, Brother Lesh, for giving new meaning to the phrase near future. What an exciting day, and what a privilege that we all have had to be here to listen to this beautiful information. We'd like to request that all of you brothers who are leaving by chartered bus, please proceed to the entrance of the convention center in a timely and orderly manner after. And your bus captain will be displaying a sign with your bus number, and he'll give you directions on boarding your bus. But we'd like to tell you that there are 7,204 here and 3,262 listening in at the 21 congregations on the Outer Islands. So before we announce our closing song, we'd like to mention that Brother Lesh and Sister Lesh will be here to have some photos in the front for about 10 minutes or so, and you may do that after we're dismissed. So let us now rise and sing a song of praise to Jehovah our God. Turn to...